Welcome to Starter Pack by Beaver Sounds. I'm Maisie Adair. Hannah Brown formed LSEX to improve the sex education of students at LSE. She's recently begun a radio show with Pulse Radio answering students' questions about sex. Here we have an informative and realistic conversation about what sexuality for students is really like, particularly in the era of COVID. There's obviously lots of information online that students can access, but it's probably not all completely reliable. So, like, what do you aim to do?
So, basically, it's aiming to provide, like, a broad, non-judgmental, questioning look into different topics around sex education, and to sort of dispel certain myths around sort of sex and sexuality and sexual health and things like that. So it's just basically aiming to provide a broad look at different topics of sex education, and be that for someone who might consider themselves like quite well informed. We are looking to have like some nuanced conversations or different opinions every week. But we also want to be able to be accessible for someone who, because obviously LSE is such an international university, maybe comes from a country where they've actually never heard any of this stuff before.
Right.
So the aim is to try and make something accessible to students that they don't have to go searching for. Because as you say, like, there's a lot of information on the internet, but sometimes it's confusing to see, you know, what's accurate and what's not. So the aim is to sort of have something there that they can use as a resource.
Great. Well, that sounds very useful and very positive. And it doesn't sound like there was anything else similar to that on campus before you started everything.
Yeah. So like last year we had, there was a week, I can't remember what they called it, that was run by the Pride Society.
Right.
But that was a week and it was quite near the end of term. And I think that often what happens is when a student gets to university, it's assumed that all students have the same level of knowledge or sex ed or whatever. Or it's like, you're 18 now, you're a grown up, tick.
Yeah, completely.
Whereas
yeah.
Actually, there's massive disparities between people's education level. And it's something that needs, especially things like safe sex, is something that needs to be reinforced throughout your time at university.
Because I do think there's an attitude that sort of your first few weeks at university, it's just like a complete free-for-all, and I think there's so much pressure to do things that you might not be comfortable with, or to find yourself in situations because, you know, you maybe have left home for the first time or you're meeting all these new people, and there seems to be such a culture of pushing that on people. And I worry a little bit about the students who maybe don't want to embrace that as much.
Yeah, for sure. I think especially, you know, if you're living away from home for the first time, and for a lot of people it's the first time sort of experiencing that amount of freedom from your parents and that amount of freedom for alcohol and stuff. And obviously when there's alcohol present, like, just statistically, you are more likely to sort of get involved in exploring your sexuality and things, just because your inhibitions are less. But yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of pressure. And I think it's a double-edged sword, because I think simultaneously we don't talk enough about how it's chill if you just don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that sometimes we also ignore that it's chill if you do want to do that.
Yeah.
But that if you do want to do that, this is how you do it safely. And sort of providing practical information rather than moral judgments on people's actions.
Yeah, completely. I think that is really important. And also I think that other universities in the UK have kind of got a really active way of doing that. You know, they've, from the outside looking in, it seems like they've figured it out, but I don't know that LSE has as much. I feel as though that kind of attitude of very professional, career-driven degrees, it filters into social life as well.
Yeah, I think other universities, well, so I personally, I went to Manchester when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some more things provided, but they were all optional.
Yeah.
So they had, in I think Freshers Week, they had like a consent workshop, but it was optional consent workshop. And the problem is when you have sort of opt-in things where you have to go in person, is that often the people who won't go were probably the people who like need to go.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the benefit of having an online resource that you can just, you know, dip in and out of, and that's the hope, because hopefully we are going to be podcasting the episodes of LSEX.
Great.
So if there's like a specific topic that you would be interested in, you can just dive into it.
Yeah. And will you be, I mean, how will the episodes be structured? Will it be you talking to experts, people at LSE, answering questions?
So a bit of both is the answer.
Great.
So basically the format that we've kind of come up with is I introduce a topic, and depending on my expertise level, I'll talk about the topic a bit, and then we'll either get an expert in or someone at LSE, or both, to come and talk about it and talk about their opinions and their sort of a bit of history, maybe things like that. But we also do a survey every week of students to ask them their sort of opinions or experience of the topic.
Great.
And we have an anonymous question forum and stuff. If you're like, here's a question that I always wanted to ask in sex ed but always felt embarrassed, or, you know, even like, here's an experience that I wish someone had said to me when I was 16 or 18. This is a thing. And no one ever did. So we have like capacity, like we're really looking to tutor it around what students want. But we're also looking at sort of, you know, not just doing the conventional topics that you might have done at school in terms of like, you know, sexual health and stuff, but also looking at sex work, which is a major component to especially London student life. And, you know, fetish and sexuality and stuff. We did a episode a couple of weeks ago with the head of LSE Pride Sock,
right,
Lily, who's very lovely. And we did that because it was the end of Pride Month. So we're also looking to tailor things around like sort of what's in the news, what's going on, things like that.
Yeah, because I was going to ask this, but I think it's quite a difficult topic to cover because, you know, there's so many preconceptions and there are so many blurred lines almost about why students will enter sort of sex work, or, and that, you know, can be anything from online work to actual physical. I mean, I don't know about now, lockdown and everything, how that works logistically, I have no clue. But, it, you know, I wonder how much of a space there is at LSE to support students who are doing work like that in a non-judgmental way.
So at LSE we do have Eleanor Janega, who is a history teacher. She is technically the member of staff who is the support staff for sex workers. So she is there if you are involved in sex work in London and need someone to talk to who is not, you know, your tutor or one of your teachers or whatever, and you need someone to talk to you in like a non-judgmental way and maybe give you advice if you're worried about your safety or the legality and stuff. So she does exist there as a resource, but it is the case that, you know, I was only aware of this because when I started LSEX, I spoke to Eleanor about it and she was like, oh, by the way, I don't know if that information is, you know, readily available on the website.
No, I've never heard of anything to do with that.
There are provisions in place to try and help you if you are involved in sex work. And it, you know, there is a statistic that 13% of girls who are students in London will be involved in sex work at some point, be that webcamming or having a sugar daddy or etc.
I had no idea it was that high a number.
It's quite high. That's just for London, but you know, it's understandable because it's so damn expensive to live in London. In terms of like practical sex work, especially as you say, post-COVID, there are sex work's one of the industries that's been practical sex works one of the industries that's been hit the hardest.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because obviously more generally, you know, we don't really know how university is going to operate, particularly in a social capacity. Do you, I might be putting you on the spot here, but do you have any tips for people who, you know, want to explore their sexuality, but kind of are being forced to do that online? You know, how do you stay safe when you, you know, manipulation and blackmail once they've done something and also been pressured into doing something in an online or
in a like non, you know, physical capacity,
a virtual I don't know
virtual, there we go, let's go with that. I think especially post-COVID, this might be something that more people are going to explore in terms of like virtual you know, exploration of sexuality. I think it's just it's very much a case of safeguarding yourself, knowing your boundaries, doing your research properly. There are especially if it's specifically sex work that you're looking into, there are, you know, there are support networks in London for you. But if it's sort of a casual thing or a one-on-one thing, it's about like knowing your own personal boundaries, making sure you're not being pressured to, you know, whatever, send a nude if you don't want to send a nude, and also knowing your legal boundaries. So knowing that, for example, if someone tries to blackmail you, that is revenge porn and that is illegal in this country. If someone puts your nudes online without your permission, that is revenge porn, which is illegal. You can get that image removed. But you also need to understand that even if though you can get that image removed, because it's the internet, it's difficult to tell how many times that image might have been downloaded or seen. But, you know, there are tips and things like don't keep identifying features of yourself in your video if you want to remain anonymous. That one.
Yeah.
And especially things like if you're doing anonymous webcamming or something like that, it's about making sure that you keep identifying factors like where you live, where you go to school, things like that, anonymous, so people couldn't abuse that.
Yeah, I mean, these are really important things to bear in mind, because I think so often the legality of this stuff and how, you know, it's actually, I don't know what the right word is, maybe severe. Sometimes it can almost seem quite shameful and scary that you're part of something that can be so easily, your
advantage of.
Yeah, your authority in it can be so easily exploited after the moment.
Yeah. But also, you know, if you want to send your boyfriend a nude, send your boyfriend a nude. And you shouldn't be judged for that, if that's how you want to explore your sexuality, but like be aware of the potential ramifications.
Yeah.
And I think also in terms of legality at LSE, we have students who are still 17 when they come to university. And in the UK, if you're 17, if you take a nude of yourself, even if you don't send it to anyone, you've created child pornography and you have broken the law. You are technically could potentially be put on a sex offender register for creating child pornography. So if you are, for example, like students from Scotland who come down are often 17, and if you, you know, took a dick pic, then you've created child pornography.
So that is illegal. Does that include even if it's of yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Even of your own body, because you've created an image of a child. And you know, that's a specific law that A, we don't teach enough in schools, but B, because we assume that everyone who's at university is 18, we don't talk about in that context either.
That's such a misconception, isn't it? That is so quite confusing to get your head around. But of course it makes perfect sense.
So that's just another aspect to consider, I mean, especially from such an international university.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to think about. I honestly, I think I knew all of that, but I'd never put it together in
Yeah.
You know, in a sensible, logical way.
Yeah, it's difficult because, you know, sex ed in this country, certainly, in schools, is never particularly explicit in terms of...
Yeah, we beat around the bush. Moralizing.
Yeah, there's a lot of moralising and there's a lot of beating around the bush. And I don't know, for my generation, certainly, all the sex ed that I received was extremely focused on either the biological fertilization process, so like extremely heteronormative, so yeah, just focusing on straight sex, or yeah, quite moralizing, so it was like, here are some pictures of what STDs look like, aren't they scary?
Of course, yeah.
But you're a bad person if you get an STD. And you're like, well, that's not actually very helpful.
Yeah, yeah, no, completely. I think mine was exactly the same. It was, you know, I don't even think there was room for questions to be asked about sex that wasn't straight sex.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I learned any of that, even at a very old age. I don't think that was covered.
Yeah, no, and like, it means, like, especially because, as we said, like, university is definitely a place where people explore sexuality. Things like the rates of STDs in lesbian relationships have increased exponentially in the last 15 years because nobody tells lesbians how to have safe sex. It's just never mentioned.
No,
and there's an assumption,
true.
There's an assumption that if you're having lesbian sex, you can't contract an STD, which is just not true.
Yeah.
Even like gay sex between two men is often also not covered, and sort of basic things like specific types of contraception like PrEP, which is a HIV preventative drug, a lot of people will never have heard of it, or it will never be mentioned, or if it is, they'll have no idea of how to access it.
Feels like you're constantly told, oh, you can't get these STIs, you know, it's really, really bad and it's shameful, but then you're never told, well, how do you get tested in a way that doesn't make you feel ashamed or embarrassed? So I feel as though there's such a stigma there that people don't get tested, and then they live with these infections knowingly or unknowingly, and then of course they end up being passed on. And it's like a bit of a vicious circle, really.
Yeah, and I think definitely part of that is the lack of practical education, and the lack of, even when you do discuss sort of STDs, is a lack of understanding of how common they are and the complications. So statistically, it's around 25%, so 1 in 4 first-year university students will contract an STD during their first year.
Wow.
Which is insane.
Yeah, so the numbers are
high. Incredibly high. Yeah, so it is really high. But as you say, there's like such a stigma around it that a lot of people, or just the lack of information around it, that a lot of people don't get tested. What people don't understand sometimes is things like, even things like chlamydia. If you are asymptomatic, so you have no signs of having chlamydia, so, you know, you might have, if you have chlamydia, you might have, you know, pain when you urinate and discharge and stuff, but actually over 80% of men don't have any symptoms. But if you live with it long term, for women, if you live with it long term, 1 in 3 women will have fertility issues. You can get arthritis from having untreated chlamydia.
You can get
pelvic inflammatory disease. So it's not just something that might affect your sexual health. Which is why it's so important to get tested. In terms of testing, we actually did an episode a couple of weeks ago with a woman from the Terence Higgins Trust, who are a sexual health charity, but where we talk about it in quite a lot of depth.
But, right, and where can you access that?
So that's going to be podcast in the next week or so.
Perfect. And that will be on all your social media channels.
Yeah, exactly. And also in terms of like, but in practicality, you can go to a clinic or a lot of clinics are walk-in, so you don't even need to make an appointment. You don't have to give them your real name if you want to be anonymous. You do have to give them your number because they need to contact you
after
they've done the test. Like your local GP won't know, your family won't know, etc. So you can go and do it in a clinic, or especially during like lockdown times, it's probably a better idea to get a postal test. which is completely free. You just order one online. It comes in a it's like a grey bag. It looks a bit like an Amazon package. It doesn't say anything on it.
And where do you order?
If you just like Google, if you were to Google like free postal STI kit, or if you were to go on the Terence Higgins website, LSE have in their student health page, they have a link to a London website where you just put in your postcode and it will tell you who your local provider will be.
Wow.
You'll have a local provider who will do free STD testing postally. But it just, it comes like completely street packaging. It's a white box inside. If you're a girl, it will probably contain a little blood sample. So you just prick your finger and put a little bit of blood in a pot, and that will test your blood, and a vaginal swab.
Mm.
And if you're a boy, it will contain the little finger prick thing, and it will contain a little urine test.
Right.
But like, that's it. And then you just put it back in the box. There's a free bag, which is like a postal bag that you put it inside and you post it off, and it's completely free, and you'll get your results within sort of 2 weeks. If you do then end up having an STD, you will have to then go into clinic to get your medicine.
Perfect.
But also, this is the thing, is a lot of people don't know what is and is not curable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have chlamydia, you just take a week of antibiotics and you're fine. I mean, either you can cure them or they're treatable for most common STDs. So it is worth getting a test. I have a friend who said this year, during first year, very smart friend of mine, said, why would you bother getting tested? It's not like you can cure chlamydia. Which is not true. And also, even if it was true, you should still get tested because you need to inform your partners.
Of course, yeah. I think that's where where it gets a bit blurry, because I think that it's said you should actually be getting tested after every single sexual partner you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that a lot of people do, and I don't know that a lot of people know that that includes all forms of sex.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can contract STDs from like oral or manual sex, and it is worth getting tested after every single person, different partner that you have. Which, as you say, I think a lot of people don't bother, but it's a very quick process. And you know, even if for nothing else, it's, you know, gives you a sense of security to know that you don't have an STD.
Right. And also, how long do you wait? Because if you have, you know, sex with someone, how long should you wait? Should you wait about a week, 2 weeks, and then get tested?
The thing is some STDs won't become detectable instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But you should go as soon as possible, especially if you're ordering a postal kit, because, you know, it will take a few days for the kit to arrive. So you might as well, you know, get in there early.
Right.
Also, it is the case that a lot of sexual health clinics, while they have walk-in clinics, they get very busy. So it's a good idea to get an appointment. In which case, again, it might take you a few days to get an appointment. But, you know, the advice is try and get one as soon as you can, because, you know, there's always a chance that you might hook up with someone else before you mean to, as it were.
Yeah.
And it's better to therefore, you know, get the test in between,
because
then you can trace where it's coming from.
Yeah, of course. No, that's all really important. And then in terms of the knowledge that most freshers have about sex as a concept, sex as a practicality in their own life, I'm wondering, what are some myths that need to get busted, and also just some things, you know, the top things that students should just be aware of and considering?
I think at LSE, one of the biggest things that incoming freshers need to consider, especially if they're UK-based, is that everyone will have had a very different experience. There are preconceptions that everyone has the same level of experience or understanding or whatever as you yourself do, which is just not true. In different countries, things are taught in different ways, and that can be very difficult in terms of even sort of social education. If you come from a country where LGBTQ issues are never discussed and you know, widely told by your government and your society and your parents that it's wrong and evil, then coming into a quite a liberal UK environment is a bit of a culture shock.
Yeah.
But it's taking the time to provide information for these students that they can access easily. I think also for incoming students, just remembering, you know, it's like myths about, you know, it's not true that everyone has to have sex by the time they're, you know, 18. Mm. Most people won't have had sex by the time they come to university. You don't have to have sex in freshers if you don't want to. If you do want to, bloody go for it, who cares? And like the whole culture of slut shaming is horrible, and you know, if a girl wants to have sex, she can have sex, but do it safely. It's remembering your boundaries of alcohol limitation, both boys and girls, in relation to consent, if you want to be hooking up with people, and making sure you're safe, because it's a sad reality, but having things like a buddy system to make sure that you're, you know, drinking responsibly sounds really boring, and, you know, sometimes feeds into a culture of, you know, she shouldn't have been drinking. But
and what is a buddy system?
If you were going out on a night out, and you know you're going to be drinking, it's you and some friend of yours agreeing to look out for each other, check on each other, make sure you're not getting so drunk that you're A, ill, or B, going to be hooking up with someone, making irresponsible decisions.
Okay.
So it's making sure that you're each other safe. Right. And that's true, like, even beyond sort of worries about consent and sex. That's just a good general piece of advice for going out in London.
Yeah.
Which obviously will be weird because of COVID, but I'm sure you guys freshers will still probably be partying. So it is still a good idea to make sure your friends are okay.
Mm, definitely. And I want to touch on as well, which you've also brought up, is that I think that there is an element of a lot of pressure on young boys, you know, to be these incredibly sexually experienced and active boys. And I really want that pressure to go, because I think it's a pressure that really limits everyone's capacity to explore what they actually want.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that as a side note to reiterate that it really is, there isn't pressure.
And, you know, there's certain expectations there's certain perceived expectations, I think, in certain societies, especially, of this. And actually, to LSE's credit, I think most of the societies I know actually don't care. And the whole idea of sort of laddie culture and stuff, I think more than not, it's about looking after each other, and it's about creating a nice, safe environment for everyone. So, like, don't worry about, you know, feeling the need to brag about your sexual prowess, etc. And, like, just treat each other decently. Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah, maybe that should be the final piece of advice for everyone, is that treat each other decently, because it isn't that difficult.
Look after yourself and don't be an arsehole to other people. That's my basic advice.
Yeah, oh, that's a really good piece of advice.
Yeah, and you know, and then you can probably, you know, have better sex as well, which is the goal.
Yeah, that's very true. So everything you're doing, where can students find out more information?
So we have a Facebook page that's under the Let's Talk About LSEX, We've got a Instagram page where we post, you know, sort of little snippets of information. We also post articles and stuff on our Facebook page. We're linked to the Pulse Radio, which is the LSE student radio. And we also have a Twitter, which is at Let's Talk About LSEX. So give us a follow. If you have any questions, ideas, whatever, we have an anonymous question forum on our Facebook. Let's Talk About LSEX. It's linked in the information like bio there.
Wow, that is really amazing. I did not know that there was an anonymous.
There is.
I can't talk. But yeah, no, thank you so much for your time, Hannah. And I'm very, very grateful that we spoke to you because you have some good information there. Thank you very much to Hannah Brown from LSEX. You can find out more by searching LSEX into Facebook or by checking out Pulse Radio Station for their shows. The music is by Anybody, spelt with two Y's, who you can find on Spotify. This episode of Starter Pack was brought to you by Maisie Adair. You can follow the series at Beaver Sounds on Spotify.